Hello, and welcome to the Codex Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Endless Odyssey, and today we embark on the beginning of our podcast journey with the first real episode of Season 1. Yesterday I recorded a sort of bonus teaser called Episode 0, where I talked generally about what this podcast is and what we'll be doing here, so if you're curious or confused, please go check that out. Before we get into the meat of today's episode, I just wanted to mention a few housekeeping items that weren't in place before I recorded Episode 0, so I wasn't able to comment on them before. I've submitted the podcast feed to both the iTunes podcast directory and the Google Play Store podcast directory, so they should be showing up there sometime in the next few days. They're currently under review, whatever that means, but once they get accepted, if they aren't still showing in the directory of the podcast app you use, then please let me know so I can look into it and figure out what it would take to get it included. I don't precisely know how all of the various podcast apps populate their databases, but if you can tell me the name of the app you use, then I can have a look at their documentation and see if it's something I can initiate by giving them the podcast feed or whatever. There is a working link to the RSS feed on the podcast website now, codexrad.io. So if your podcast app of choice supports manually adding feeds, then you should be able to just copy the RSS URL from there and enter it in, and it should pull down the thumbnail and episodes automatically after that. But let me know if you're in some kind of weird edge case that has a problem, and I can try to look into it. Additionally, the podcast now has a Twitter account, at Codex_Radio, so please go follow that for updates related to the show, and of course feel free to DM or tweet your feedback, thoughts, suggestions, etc. to it. Or if you prefer to do that by email, you can always email the show at codexpodcast@myriadtruths.com. Okay, that does it for announcements. On with the show! So, this is the beginning of Season 1, so I have to spend a little time in this episode setting up for what we're going to be reading before we just get into it. There's several texts that immediately occurred to me as suitable candidates for the show, and it's been tough to decide which should receive the dubious honor of being the topic of the first season. I expect the first season to be a little bumpy as I iron out the details of the format and get used to the recording and editing process, so I ultimately decided that it would be wiser to pick a shorter text, A, so that we could get through it relatively quickly, and B, if it turns out to be a total bust, then we won't have to suffer through it for very long. I mentioned in Episode 0 that there were some very obvious materials that would be within the scope of the show, such as direct novelizations of games or supplementary stories written about pre-existing game worlds. And in a way, what I've chosen for Season 1 kind of bridges the gap between those categories in kind of an interesting way. I've written before on the Myriad Truths blog about my undying love for the Myst franchise. I think principally in my essay last year about Abduction, which was sort of the spiritual successor to the Myst series that Cyan Worlds kickstarted a while back. Besides being phenomenal games and me having a personal emotional connection to them due to the circumstances of my life, their subject matter and lore ties into this podcast in kind of a unique way. You know, the concept of linking books as artifacts which allow you to teleport into different worlds is kind of a brilliant metaphor for the power of books, and that's something that's always kind of struck me about Myst and stayed with me in the years since I originally played those games. Now, there are in fact some novels written in the Myst universe by Robin and Rand Miller, the brothers who created the Myst franchise. There's three of them, in fact, and I think they're prime candidates for this show, but we're not going to be reading any of those today. We're going to be reading something rather unusual instead. Something you probably wouldn't expect, I'd bet. We're going to be reading the Prima Strategy Guide for Riven, the sequel to Myst. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Why in God's green earth would we read a strategy guide on this podcast? You know, how could that possibly be interesting to anyone? And, well, you may end up ultimately vindicated, depending on how this goes, but the Prima Strategy Guide for Riven is actually very different than what your conception of a strategy guide probably is. you know, this was back in the mid-90s when strategy guides were actually something worth owning, since sources of good information about video games on the internet were still relatively rare. But beyond that, Rick Barba, the author of the Prima Strategy Guide for Riven, did something kind of interesting when he was putting the guide together. The guide itself is actually broken up into two sections. The first is a relatively straightforward, no-nonsense, cheap book that gives you step-by-step solutions to each of Riven's puzzles in order, as you would expect and probably want your strategy guide to do. But the second half is a more detailed walkthrough that's actually written in a narrative format from the perspective of the Stranger, which is the Myst fandom's name for the series protagonist, kind of as though he was keeping a journal while exploring Riven and tackling the objectives set before him. So, the story in Myst and Riven, to me, were always just as important as their puzzle design. So when I picked up the strategy guide back in 1997 when it first came out, I was kind of delighted to find that Barba had captured the story of the game in such a unique way. You know, the Stranger is meant to be the player, him or herself, and therefore is never given any lines of dialogue or any characterization whatsoever in the game, which is kind of an effective method of allowing the player to immerse themselves in the character and act out the unfolding narrative themselves, but it means some of the most significant emotional moments of the game are not actually captured within the game, as they're external events of surprise, delight, and fear and frustration that the player experiences when bumping up against complicated puzzles and teasing out clever solutions. You know, I still own a copy of that Prima Strategy Guide for Riven somewhere around here. It's no doubt in a box in my closet or something, but every time I come across it, I open it up and I start reading it again. And I find myself instantly transported back to my childhood. Barba does a fantastic job in his telling of the Riven story and of capturing what it's like to play these games, the agony of defeat and the thrill of victory, every small setback and every leap forward. It's the canonical version of the Riven story in my mind, and now I'd like to share it with all of you. It's relatively short. You know, when you cut out the hours of agony teasing out the solutions to puzzles you don't quite understand, the Myst games are really not that long. It's hard for me to judge or know how interesting this will be to you if you've never played Riven or Myst. If you haven't, I can't recommend those games enough, but I'm hopeful that Barba's writing and my reading of it will sufficiently convey the story to you in a meaningful way, but a large part of these games have to do with the visual design of their worlds, which are quite breathtaking, and even the journal section of the Prima Guide contains a fair number of black and white screenshots of the game to illustrate whatever the Stranger is referring to. You know, Barba justifies this in the context of the story by suggesting that the Stranger actually takes a camera with them to Riven and uses that to capture certain moments. It turns out that Barba was actually just ahead of his time, because the introduction of an in-game camera did eventually come to the Myst series in the fourth game, Revelation. So, that's what we're going to be reading for Season 1. It's a little unusual, but I'm hopeful that it will be worthwhile, especially for fans of the series. There's a couple of small edits I'm going to be making to the text, kind of on the fly, to sort of work around the fact that the Stranger references these screenshots, and there are a couple of sequences where the Stranger abridges other in-game texts that you come across, such as the journals of Atreus and Catherine. Instead, I'll just read those texts aloud in their entirety as they're presented in the game, as they contain some key information, and the prose is well-written and thankfully short enough that there isn't really a need to abridge them if they aren't easily reproduced. There are apparently paperback copies of this 20-year-old strategy guide still available for sale online, so I'll throw a link to that in the show notes for the episode in case you're interested in reading along or getting a copy for yourself. I was able to find a digitized copy of the guide, but it doesn't actually appear to be for sale anywhere, so there's no Kindle version or anything like that that I could find. All right, I think that's enough setup. Welcome to Season 1 of Codex Radio. Thank you. My mist journal is now complete. Here begins Riven. After taking one last nostalgic tour around the uninhabited ages linked to mist, I returned to Denis, misspelled Dunny in my mist journal, to find Atrus still scribbling away. He looked up with obvious relief and said, "Thank God you've returned. I need your help." Apparently, zapping me home wasn't an option. I stepped forward. I remember his last words. "I am fighting a foe much greater than my sons could even imagine." He handed over his journal, warning me to keep it well hidden. He can't send me to Riven with a way out, but gave me what appears to be a linking book back to Denis. It is in fact a one-man prison. A trap. I need it to capture Gen. Who's Gen? I didn't ask. Atrus had no time to explain, but once I arrived here in Riven, I glanced at his journal. Atrus, I knew, was lured into Denis exile by his own greedy offspring. Who could be a greater foe than a man's own sons? Of course, his father. Wow. Greek tragedy had better family values. The man who taught Atrus the art of the linking books is an evil megalomaniac. Worse, he's a bad writer. Atrus spoke of the familiar pattern of decay that is a hallmark of my father's work. Apparently, Gen's fifth age is breaking apart. Known as Riven, that age is also where Catherine is imprisoned. From Denis, Atrus furiously debugs his father's flawed Riven code, trying to save both his wife and her dying home world. But his patches can only delay the inevitable catastrophe. I slipped the journal into my camera case. Atrus held out the linking book to Riven. Its gateway image was blurred, unlike the crisp image in his mist books. I snapped a photo. Then I hesitated. But the weary concern in Atrus' eyes spurred me to reach out. I placed my hand upon the page. Temple Island. And now I sit on yet another island. Unlike Mist, this one is inhabited. A blessing? The jury's still out. Let me bring you up to date. The link was painless, as usual, but my arrival wasn't unexpected. Despite his flaws as a linking book author, Gen knows his interdimensional rip locations. I materialized in a cage, and my arrival alerted a wild-looking guy in a helmet and white coat, a sentry or guard, no doubt. Speaking in a strange tongue, he wrenched the prison book from me. Moments later, the guard slapped at his neck and fell, unconscious. A black-clad figure dragged him away and picked up the prison book. To my surprise, this new fellow pulled the lever to open my cage and smashed the lever mechanism with an axe, jamming the bars open permanently. Then, like a phantom, he disappeared. I stepped out and looked around. The island is spectacular. Like Mist, it bristles with odd structures and mechanisms. Walkways span the cliffs above. A system of rails or cables runs to other islands. I glance over the nearby cliff. My ex-guard lies on a ledge below, a dagger beside him. I turn back to the cell where I arrived. Next to it, an object juts from the ground. A giant version of the same dagger. Interesting. Telescope. Nearby hulks what seems to be a huge viewing device, an eyepiece. Two movable levers and a button. The lens points down at a closed hatch with five buttons. The device seems to lack power, and I can't find an on-off switch. As I stare at the telescope and jot these notes, a thought strikes me. Atrus asked me to signal him once I've found Catherine. How? Time to continue reading the journal of Atrus. Perhaps I'll find the answer there. Atrus's journal. 87.6.10. They held for more than 30 years, but the corrections I made to Riven have finally failed. The island has resumed the familiar pattern of decay that is the hallmark of my father's work. I must now race to implement the new patch before it's too late. I only hope that my revised theories are sound. 87.6.16. Revisions to Riven completed. There are still a number of minor adjustments which need to be made, but the basic corrections have been entered and should be working. Something's not right. I've been monitoring the instrument for several hours now, but thus far have observed no change. It's possible that I've made an error, though. I've checked my entry against my prenotation and can find no discrepancy. I've not had a rest in nearly 3 days, so it may be that I'm just not seeing it. If the fault is with my foundational assumptions, however, perhaps after a short rest I'll see something. 87.6.18. Success! It appears that my repairs have been effective after all. The gateway image has become noticeably clearer. Although it's impossible to know this with absolute certainty, the island seems to have quieted itself. Just a few more weeks of work, and I should be free at last to go there myself and attempt to bring Catherine back. The past 8 months have left me with little time to think, to devise a strategy for getting her out of there. I've received no sign from her in all that time. I'm afraid that... No, I must assume that she is all right, lest my fears undermine my efforts to bring her back. 87.6.19. I did not create the Age of Riven. Unlike my father, I've never presumed to have such power, and yet the future of all those who live there have fallen into my hands. So far, I've managed to read the page before it turns. The island continues to appear stable, and I'd like to believe that I have saved a dying world, but the theories of one individual cannot support the lives of real people indefinitely. I must get everyone off Riven as soon as possible. The problem now is Gen. I'll never be able to rescue Catherine and relocate the Islanders if he is still the man he once was. I haven't seen him in over 30 years, but his history forces me to assume that he is still a threat. His myopic mission to restore the Dani civilization has left too many innocent cultures dying in its wake, and would continue to do so were he once again to be free of the confines of Riven, or the Fifth Age, as he coldly titled it. The universe has been safe from his corruptive influence for the last 33 years because no one has been able to leave that age. The last linking book out of Riven has been lost in the star fissure upon my return to Myst. That was my intention, to maroon my father on Riven by removing all the existing links to other worlds. And since the art of constructing books had long been lost with the fall of the Dani, he would be trapped there for the remainder of his lifetime, and effectively segregated from the countless other worlds that he would have invaded. In effect, that is what we achieved. But the way it fell, however, was no one's ideal. Though the sting of the incident has gradually faded from my memory, the deep pain of the responsibility for what actually came to be has never left me. At the time, it all seemed so clear. Gen's destructive path could not be allowed to continue. But it was never my choice that the innocent inhabitants of Riven, who had already suffered so much, would be the ones to pay for it. Enough. To dwell in the past is to die in the present. The situation is not the same as it was then. The knowledge I've acquired in the years since that time has yet to be applied to this problem. 87.6.20. I think I have the solution. Why it did not occur to me sooner, I do not know, unless the idea of it had been pushed out with the thought of my sons. A prison book. Many years ago, during a hunting expedition through the ruins of Dani, I chanced upon a formula for a most unusual type of book. Unfortunately, due to the fact that my father was then in the habit of confiscating my discoveries, I was forced to leave it behind. Years later, however, as part of my efforts to protect the vulnerable worlds linked to in the books in my library, I was pleased to find that I could still recall most of the formula, and with little experimentation, quickly succeeded in creating one of these. The procedure is actually quite simple. By altering key lines of text, but slightly, a normal linking book's connection can be partially severed, such that anyone who attempts to use the book will be permanently trapped in the dark void of the link, That is, unless someone else then uses the book, at which point that person would become trapped, and the first person displaced back into the world. The technique can be applied to books that have already been written, changes to the original text being so slight that anyone who is unfamiliar with the code will be unable to detect them. If indeed my father has not changed, what better bait could there be than a book that appears to link back here to Denis? 87.7.2. Trouble. My nightly analysis of the island's condition has revealed that the tremors have begun again. The pattern, however, is new. The disturbances are the result of the changes I have made. This did not, at first, concern me, however. Tremors of this type were one of the possible side effects I had anticipated during this initial phase of the island's readjustment. Still, in order to verify my assumption, I decided to calculate again, incorporating the new data. The results were not what I expected. The damage to the understructure is more extensive than I'd realized. I can no longer go to Riven as planned. Catherine, forgive me. 87.7.3. I must act while I still have the time. The signs are barely visible, but there's no question that the island's deterioration is accelerating. Total collapse is imminent, unless I can keep ahead, and that is becoming increasingly difficult to do. 87.7.5. With every passing moment, I gain a clearer picture of the incredible chaos that my father's economy of words has yielded. But it is a dismaying process. The complexity of the problem is overwhelming. There's no end to this. The last few days have all but convinced me that the collapse of Riven is inevitable, and that at best, I can only strive to delay it now and hope at some point the island will become stable enough to risk a rescue attempt. 87.7.7. I think I've come up with a way to subdue the tremors. It will require my exclusive attention for at least a month or two, so it may be necessary to discontinue these journal entries for a while. 87.7.13. Something truly miraculous has happened. Beyond all conceivable probability, someone has finally found my lost missed linking book and has freed me from this prison. I immediately realize that this could be the solution to my dilemma, and I believe my mysterious benefactor is willing to assist me. I'm still not sure it can work. The logistics of such a scheme are formidable, but the mere fact that it may now be possible for me to continue my repairs to Riven and yet proceed with my original intent to find Catherine has given me renewed hope. 87.7.16. The last few days have left me with little time to work out the remaining problems with sending someone else to Riven. It did occur to me, however, that if a way could be found to signal me once again had been captured, it would no longer be necessary to take a real linking book to Riven and risk the possibility of inadvertently releasing Gen. The deteriorated state of the gateway image makes use of a visual signal impossible, but the picture remains a reliable indicator of Riven's condition nonetheless. By measuring and interpreting variations in the noise patterns, I'm still able to observe basic changes that occur in the age, even though I cannot see them. The problem is that my instruments can only detect changes that occur on a fundamental level, and it seems unlikely that an individual could affect such an elementary change from within an age. The idea may be foolish. Still, there is a known weakness that may be worth investigating. An anomaly that appears as a rift between two separate systems, the star fissure. But how or even if this fact could be exploited, I cannot say. Sending someone to Riven also means that once I received the signal that they were ready to return, I would have to leave my writing in order to take a real linking book there myself. However, provided my father was safely out of the way, this should take very little time. After that, assuming the island does not incur much damage in my absence, it should then be a relatively simple matter to hold it together long enough for Catherine to return to Riven and evacuate the remaining islanders. Predetermining a signal without knowing the topography of the island may prove to be impossible, but I'm afraid there can only be one answer to the question of whether or not I should send my friend to Riven with a way out, the potential for failure will be greatly diminished if it's the prison book that's all that's taken there. I'm sure my father is expecting me to bring a linking book to Riven. May he not be disappointed. Unsettling. The more I read, the worse it gets. Gen, Destroyer of Worlds, is marooned here in Riven. More chilling are these words. The complexity of the problem is overwhelming. Riven is dying. One other note. Atrus duly acknowledges my Mist rescue. My arrival in Denis with the missing white page of his Mist linking book is dated 87.7.13. What this means, I have no idea, but the next entry, 87.7.16, clarifies Atrus' current motives. He gave me no return linking book because he so terribly fears Gen's escape. As for the signal I am to give, the Riven Gateway image is trashed. Atrus can't see or hear me. He can only observe what he calls basic changes in the age. So his only suggestion is to investigate an anomaly that appears as a rift somewhere, the star fissure, he calls it. All I have to do is find this rift, exploit its weakness to effect a fundamental change in the Riven Age, and then wait patiently for Atrus while all hell breaks loose. Sounds easy. I've always enjoyed exploiting anomalous fissures. Time to explore. The only egress from the telescope area lay up a stone stairway. At the top, a small opening had been hewn into the rock face. From there, a footbridge extended over a chasm to another opening in the far rocks. The path continued past the entrance and down the other side. I moved across the footbridge for an overview of the island. And then I returned and entered the passage. The gate room. Inside, a button juts from the wall, just outside a fabulous five-sided room where I sit now writing. What is this place? A planetarium? A holy place? What happens if I push the button? Five sides, two doors, but that far gate is locked. Is there another way through? Everything is fives. Five pointed stars, five walls, five pillars. Mounted on each pillar is a scarab-like beetle with an eyepiece depicting strange religious icons like a stained glass window in a church. Four scenes feature the same prominent godlike figure. My guess? Gen. A gate on the rear left wall is locked. Beyond the gate, a footbridge runs across a chasm to the massive dome structure of brilliant burnished gold. I couldn't find a lock mechanism, though, so I stepped back outside and pushed the wall button, hoping it would unlock the gate. The entire room began to rotate. I watched in awe as the inner chamber made 1/5 of a turn, bringing back memories of the tower rotation code on Mist Island. But now my entry was blocked. Two more turns would bring the far door around to my position. I pushed the button two more times and re-entered the gate room. The doorway I originally entered through had rotated to the rear right wall, and there another locked gate. Beyond that, a closed door. Now what? Aha! This must be the answer. I exited the gate room and followed a path down to a primitive wooden gate. It was locked, but easy enough to crawl under. I followed a cave passage to a peephole and looking into the gate room. Obviously, this was a side passage. I needed only rotate the inner chamber so one of the doorways was on the wall of this room. Success! I got in the side door. And across the gate room, the other doorway led into a short cave with some kind of pipe and valve. I flipped the valve and listened to the steam hiss down the pipe. Where to? The diagram etched on the pipe gave me a pretty good idea. Steam power to the telescope? When I climbed back up the passage, I found a power switch just outside the door. I applied what I now call the Mist rule. Flip any switch that'll move. Something happened in the gate room. My guess? A gate opened. More room rotation confirmed my guess. The far right gate was open, but the door beyond remained closed and locked. I found another power switch, however. This one opened the other locked gate. More rotations brought me back into the main antechamber, where I rotated the room again to its original setting. And I was off to the Golden Dome. I've got a new theory about this dome. It's not an observatory, no sign of a telescope anyway, but everything I've seen so far points to a system of steam power. I think the Golden Dome is sort of a central power source for Riven's Island Cluster. Inside, a huge boiler-like mechanism sprouts 5 pipes running in 5 directions. I feel moist heat, and I hear bubbling liquid. Outside, I see the pipes drop into the sea and then rise ashore at other islands. To what, specifically, do they connect? Right now, I stand before a plaque on the railing. No doubt it diagrams the power dispersal, but there's some sort of grid code. A catwalk circles the dome's interior. There's an upper-level catwalk, but I can't reach it from here. For now, I'll follow the lower catwalk. Drawbridge controls. My steam power hypothesis held water, if you'll pardon the feeble pun. The lower catwalk exited the far side of the Golden Dome, emerging just beneath a lengthy footbridge. The footbridge ran from the dome's upper catwalk to an island shimmering on the water about half a mile away. There was no obvious way up the footbridge, though. I continued along the walkway to a pipe, venting steam into the air. I turned the valve handle to cap the vent, and this sent steam flowing out a side pipe. I looked up. The side pipe ran directly into a raised drawbridge at the Golden Dome end of the long inter-island footbridge. No movement, though. Powering up certain devices in Riven must be a 2-step process. First, you direct the steam power to the mechanism, then you must throw a switch or lever on the device to activate it. At the end of the walkway, I flipped another pipe valve to send steam power up to the footbridge I crossed earlier, the one connecting the gate room to the Golden Dome. The diagram etched on the pipe indicated that the footbridge is a drawbridge, too. This was as far as I could go on the walkway, so I returned to the Golden Dome. Before crossing the bridge back into the gate room, I gave the lever by the dome entry a yank. Sure enough, the footbridge raised. Unfortunately, on my side, the Golden Dome side. I lowered it to continue back through to the gate room. Now I sit at the cave passage across the chasm from the gate room writing this update. Actually, I'm stalling. It's pretty dark down there. I don't like the dark. It's a vitamin D thing. Okay, maybe a bat thing, too. Bats hang out in dark caves, just waiting to shriek in your ear. I know this for a fact. The throne room. The technology of these ages continues to amaze me. I found a room carved from the rock halfway down the cave passage. In it, a caged chair sits alone. Lurks, really. It has a malevolent aura, this chair. When I approached it, its caged bars lifted like the legs of a mechanical spider. Lighting seemed important here. Spotlights encircled the throne, casting brilliant light on whoever might sit there. I chose to sit and update this journal, but first I examined the 2 view screens on the wall. The left screen displays stairs leading up to a platform. Above the platform hang cables like those I've seen stretching from island to island, some sort of terminal, perhaps? The other screen displays a room lined with pillars. I flipped a switch next to the screen, and in the display a door opened. It seemed to lead outside. Where is it? As I sit here in the chair, I notice a button. When I push it, the cage lowers. A microphone-like device drops before me. I pull a switch and hear a hum. Something's powering up, I'm not sure what. In any case, whoever sits in this chair maintains surveillance via these monitors. But surveillance of what? Time to continue down the cave passage. Temple. Now I understand. The passage leads to the pillar-lined room I'd seen in the throne room view screen. It's a place of worship. Backlit by yet another 5-pointed star, a cage, suspiciously like the one over the throne upstairs, sits between wood carvings of 2 scaly creatures, They resemble humpbacked whales with tusks, most unpleasant. Before each idol lay offerings of fruit and flowers. Isn't hard to guess the scheme here. Someone sits on the throne upstairs. This person's image and voice project to this temple chamber, filled with cowering Rivenese, no doubt. In my Myst adventures, I encountered a similar device, Akinar's hologram projector in Channelwood. Like grandfather, like grandson, I guess. Does Gen need this sort of thing to keep the inhabitants of his age in line, or is he just in it for the fruit? The open door leads outside Gen's temple to yet another remarkably cool Riven device. At the bottom of the platform is a small podium with a glowing blue button on top. I push the button and notice movement in the distance. Something emerged from the tall, heavily wooded island across the way. I look closer. A pod-like metal car zipped along the cables over the water. Had I called a cab? I grew excited. A way to escape Temple Island. But as the car approached, I began to wonder just who might be aboard. Guys in white coats? Villagers bearing fruit? Or Gen himself? The car arrived. Thankfully empty. I climbed aboard. Turned out to be a self-service tram. Fortunately, the controls were designed for idiots like me. After just a few weeks, I got the car rotated and ready to go. And then I decided to jot this journal update before I try flipping the power switch. I want to document any fatal mistakes. Hey, that's just the kind of adventurer I am. All right, that's going to do it for episode 1 of season 1. I know we maybe cut it a little short today. I took up a little bit too much time with the introduction, I think. I'm going to try to generally shoot for about 45 minutes per episode. You know, we may end up going over that or under that in some cases, but that's my goal. I like a good 45-minute podcast. So that may mean we read multiple chapters per week. Sometimes if it's especially a long chapter, maybe we'll only read one, but we'll try to target 45 minutes as best we can. So this will be going out on a Wednesday, which I think is the day that I've settled on that I'd like to release new episodes on, because it seems like not many podcasts come out on Wednesday, so why not take advantage of that prime hump day real estate? So I hope you enjoyed the first official episode of Codex Radio. I know it's a bit unusual in terms of the subject matter, but, you know, I need to get practice in. So please bear with me, and I will try to improve as we go along. Yeah, please send me your feedback on what you thought of the first episode. I'm at @endless_odyssey on Twitter. And you can tweet at the show's Twitter account as well, like I mentioned in the intro. That's @codex_radio. Thanks so much, and I'll see you next week.